Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello again and welcome to another Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Silkcoats North Parish Church. Tonight, we're very honoured to have with us Mr. Kenneth Gibson, MSP, our local member of the Scottish Parliament. So welcome, Kenneth, and thanks for coming to the studio. We appreciate your giving up your time for us. You're a busy man.
No, thank you very much, Alex. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
So how long have you been an MSP?
Well, I've been an MSP for this constituency since May 2007. Before that, I was actually a regional list member in Glasgow from 1999 to 2003. But I have to say that having your own constituency is much, much better than just being a name on a list.
Can you explain that a wee bit? It's a bit confusing for some folk. You know, what's a constituency list?
All right. Well, basically what happens is when people vote in the Scottish Parliament elections, they have two votes, one in which they vote for someone to represent their local area, their constituency, and there are others who are elected by proportional representation to represent nine constituencies, that is, in the west of Scotland, or in my case, 10 in Glasgow, and that means you're elected effectively by your party members rather than by the public. But I think most people really associate themselves more with their constituency member. Having been two, it's quite interesting when you look at the contrast. Certainly for a constituency member, the workload is infinitely more than it is for a list member, who tend to have more time to focus on policy and politics rather than constituency matters.
Why is the workload more?
Because most people go to their constituency member first if they have a problem, and in my case I spend about 80 to 90% of my working week on constituency matters rather than political or parliamentary matters.
I'm kind of curious to know what sort of things that people contact you about.
Well, absolutely. Everything that you can possibly imagine. I mean, I'm trying to think today. I mean, I've had letters in my office today about the development of the proposed development of the Hunterston Power Station. I've had a contact from someone who was dismissed from their employment, they believe unfairly. People who've got issues with their neighbours, folk who come to me about the state of the roads. You name it, people come to see me and I never turn anyone away.
And they always think you have a magic wand, eh?
No, I think most people are realistic. In fact, some people actually come to you not expecting much and they're actually surprised when you can help them. But of course, it depends on the complexity of the case. And some cases can be solved literally in a day. Others can take weeks or even months and can take a long, long time. A lot of correspondence and a lot of communication. Mm.
Do you get a lot of satisfaction in your job? Do you find that you can press buttons and make things happen?
I think it's a job in which I do really, really enjoy, actually, especially the constituency side of it, to be honest, because I think that's really the most important aspect of your job. It can be very frustrating, though, because I do think the media has a distorted view of politicians and what we actually do. And quite clearly, with the expenses for AGO down south, then that's obviously been accentuated at this time.
Yeah, but you're quite proud to be a politician.
Well, I don't know if I'm proud to be a politician, but I'm certainly happy to be a politician in terms of I'm happy with my own political party. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm happy to be able to represent the people of this constituency, which is quite a diverse one.
I was going to ask you, what is the boundary of your constituency, roughly?
Well, it actually takes in quite a lot. I mean, in the three towns area, it's Silkcoats and Ardrossan, and it goes up the coast via West Kilbride, Fairlie, Largs to Skelmorlie. And then inland we've got Beath, Doorai, Coburnie, Barmill, and of course the two islands of Cumbrae and Arran. So it's very diverse, urban, rural, prosperous, deprived, and a combination of everything really.
Now, I've invited you to bring your favourite music and to maybe explain a wee bit why you've chosen your tracks. So, your first track is Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Water. Why is that a special track to you?
Well, I think most of the music that I've actually brought with me today, Alex, are songs that go back many years in my life, actually. And I think, you know, at times in my life, we all have ups and downs. And I think sometimes music can actually help you. And I think Bridge Over Troubled Water is a very, very relaxing kind of tune. And it's certainly one that makes you think about the fact that you're really not alone.
I
So we're very pleased to have Kenneth Gibson in the studio tonight, our local MSP. I'd just like to ask you, Kenneth, to tell us a wee bit about your early days and your background. Like, when and where were you born?
Well, I was born in Paisley in 1961, mainly because the maternity hospitals in Glasgow were full at the time. And then I lived till I was eight in Kelvin Grove and grew up in Govan and stayed there until I was in my 30s, in fact. And I was educated at Bellhouson Academy. And when I left there, I went to the University of Stirling and studied economics. And when I left university, I worked in British Steel for 4.5 years, initially at Glengarnock for a few weeks, just before it closed, and then Glasgow, and then moved on to Ravenscraig and DL Works.
Can I take you back a wee bit into your childhood?
Sure.
Anything significant in your childhood? Was it a normal sort of childhood, if there is such a thing?
Yes, mum, dad, twin sister, that was the size of the household, you know. We're quite a tight-knit family, you know. My grandmother lived in the next close. I had cousins across the landing, downstairs, across the street, all that kind of stuff. And when we moved across the Clyde from Kelvin Grove to Govan, they all followed us. When I was a boy, I went to Sunday school. I was in the 47th Sandyford Boys Brigade. I played football for them on a Saturday, although abysmally. I had two left feet, still do, and I was probably the worst player in the team, but I did enjoy it, and I do have fond memories of standing out in the rain in places like Dodds Home Park, you know, early on a Saturday morning.
Yeah. Where did your dad work at?
My father was a cable jointer. My grandfathers both worked in the shipyards. And my grandmother was keen that my father did not follow his father into the shipyards because they were laid off so often. And, you know, if you didn't buy the foreman a whiskey on a Friday night, you didn't get a start on a Monday. So she worked in the post office during the war and got my dad a job as a telegraph boy. So after he did his national service in the Royal Navy, he went back into the post office and worked on phone lines.
So were you thinking you would follow in your dad's footsteps in that line?
No, I didn't really think that, actually. I mean, to be honest, when I was at school, I didn't really know what I wanted to be honest.
Want to be a politician, by any chance?
I hadn't really gave that any thought, actually, to be honest, when I was at school, although, you know, I mean, politics wasn't really talked about that much when I was at home, to be honest. But I became interested in politics when I was a teenager, and I joined the SNP when I was 17.
So I'm interested, what caused you to suddenly be interested in politics?
Well, I mean, to be honest, actually, it was a kind of road to Damascus thing in a way. I mean, you know, I went to work as a volunteer on a kibbutz when I was 17. And, you know, I saw the kind of, although whether people agree with it or not, the kind of strength of national feeling and patriotism in Israel and how they'd built this nation out of Holocaust survivors and refugees from all over the world. And then on the way back, I hitchhiked through Europe and I was in Switzerland, which is half the size of Scotland, a similar size population. And I saw the colossal standard of living they actually had. And I thought to myself, well, if Switzerland was the kind of mountainous bit at the southern end of Germany, people would have emigrated to Germany for work, or if it was the eastern part of France, they would have looked to Paris, or the northern part of Italy, it would have looked to Milan. But because between those countries it was able to forge its own economy and its own strong identity, it's very prosperous, you know, banking, chocolate, pharmaceuticals, whatever. And I went back to Glasgow and I thought, well, I'd like Scotland to be as prosperous as Switzerland and many other smaller countries in Europe. So my first day at university, I joined the SNP and I've been a member now for 31 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's pause for breath here with another piece of music. Mm-hmm. And can you explain why you've chosen this track?
Yes, Todd Rundgren is nothing like as well known as Simon and Garfunkel, but this is a song that takes me back to my teenage years, in which I look back on fondly. But of course, they were full of angst and concern about where one was going to go with one's life, and also all sorts of teenage feelings, if that's not too an obscure way to put it. So anyway, I hope that your listeners will actually like it. It's called Sometimes I Don't Know What to Feel.
Sometimes I don't know what to feel. Sometimes I don't know.
So Kenneth, picking up from that teenage angst of Todd Rundgren, you take us after you were a teenager and you left school and you started work. How did things pan out for you then?
Well, I worked in British Steel for more than 4 years, actually. But I have to say it was a very uncertain life because we always had the threat of redundancy hanging over us. And I was indeed made redundant on Hugman A in 1986. And after that, I moved into pharmaceuticals. I worked at the Glasgow Garden Festival, I should say, for 2 years. And I should say that because I met my wife there. And
Tell us, to stop you there, was there a romantic moment at the Glasgow Garden Festival?
There probably was, but I don't know if I really want to mention that on air. But anyway, I got married in 1989 after a 2 year courtship, and I had three children, two sons and a daughter. Son Ross, born in 1992, daughter Heather, born in 1996, and a son Lewis, born in 1998. And during that time, I worked in the pharmaceutical industry for a number of different companies. I was also elected to Glasgow City Council in 1992. And that was an important time because I was the first SNP councillor elected in Glasgow, believe it or not, for 15 years. They're 22 now, but I was only one then. Mm-hmm. And I was determined to get re-elected and be the first to be re-elected in Glasgow. And I was indeed re-elected, and I got 78% of the vote when I was up for re-election. So, and indeed my mother, who succeeded me in 1999 in that council ward, still represents the area today.
I'm dying to ask a question which you maybe can't answer. Mm-hmm. Why did you have that appeal? Why did you make that breakthrough and get such a high percentage?
Hard work and determination, to be honest. I mean, it's the only way, really. I mean, the thing about the party that I represent is that most people who vote for it have voted for other parties before. They don't have a traditional way of voting, SNP, so therefore you can be judged more harshly than other parties. So you have to work harder, I think, to stay still and to move forward.
You're never sure if folk are voting for the party or the person.
Yeah. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other, and sometimes it's both. I mean, I still get people from my old council ward, even though I haven't represented it for 11 years, phoning my office in Dalry and asking me to help them. And I have to refer them on to my mum or their local MSP, I have to say, because we're not allowed to represent people from outside our own constituency, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be anarchy.
And am I right in thinking your wife's involved in politics too, Patricia?
Yes, my wife actually is a member of Glasgow City Council. She was elected in 2007, before we were married, in fact. So I've also got a cousin in Glasgow City Council, and I've never even met him, funnily enough. So I've got a mother, a cousin, and a wife, all in Glasgow City Council, all SNP, funnily enough.
It helps if you're in the same party.
It does, actually, although I've certainly known couples in which... I remember a famous couple in the SNP in which the husband defected from Labour to SNP, and a few years later the wife defected from SNP to Labour, so they both actually found themselves in the opposite party from which they started out in. But that is highly unusual, I must say.
So take us through, you were having your working career, mm-hmm. and then politics just gradually gets more and more significant to you. Is that how it works?
Well, yes. I mean, although I joined the SNP in 1979, I wasn't really active until about 1982, 1983. And then, of course, what happens is it's a bit like a drug, and it takes over your life sometimes. And I have to say, if my wife wasn't as committed as I was, life would be a nightmare, because it does mean very much that you have a very limited social life. That's if you're committed. Mm-hmm. And I've been pretty committed for the last 25 years or so, and I've believe it or not, I've contested 14 elections.
14 elections?
Well, I used to stand every year in Glasgow when I was like 22, 23, 24. Didn't have much luck standing in places like the Gorbals, of course, which were Labour strongholds, but eventually I broke through at the seventh attempt, would you believe, and I've won four elections in total now.
I'm thinking this is why your next track's entitled Mercy, Mercy Me.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. Yeah, I mean, Mercy, Mercy Me by Marvin Gaye, which has been covered, of course, by Robert Palmer, among others. I think it's a great song because although it's now nearly 40 years old, it's a song which still resonates today. And it's a song that basically expresses concerns about the future of society and the planet and where we're actually going as a civilization.
What they used to be now. Where did the Lord did something so far.
Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live near Baba's lives. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they.
So we have Kenneth Gibson, our local MSP, here tonight on 3TFM, and you've been saying that your family is full of SNP people. Why is it the SNP as opposed to other parties?
Well, I think well, we all make up our own mind on that, I think, but I just think that we believe that Scotland will be better off as an independent country. You know, every country that's gained independence over the last couple of centuries, from the United States to Australia to Canada to Norway, seems to have made a good go of it, and none of them seem to want to surrender that independence. So I think that says a lot about that. And I think it's like people want to, you know, as nations want to run their own affairs, or I certainly believe we do, rather than have your next door neighbour do it. And I think that what we want really is equality of nations within Europe, rather than feel ourselves to be a kind of part of a greater political union where perhaps we're treated with benign neglect, I might say.
If Scotland got independence, wouldn't the first thing you would do is make strong links with England and Europe and other bodies wider afield?
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, we're not separatists. We want to participate. We want Scotland to be part of the United Nations, which we're not. And we want to be an independent member of the European Union, like the other 27 countries, half of which are smaller than us. And as Alex Salmond has said on a number of occasions, you know, England would lose a surly lodger and gain a good neighbour. And of course, because of family and other ties, England, Ireland and Wales would be our closest friends. Of course, they've got ties of language and family, just like we have with Canada and Australia and the United States. Not that we want to be run by them either.
Would there be a big difference on the ground between the present arrangements where we have connections with England and Europe and others? Is it a mental thing to feel independent? You know, would it look much different if we had independence?
I think it would just mean that we would have greater political control, to be honest. I think the social union would remain. I know some daft people say, oh, you wouldn't be able to watch Coronation Street, but, you know, I'm a big fan of things like CSI Miami, and we're able to watch them even though they're US productions. So I don't think there'd be any cultural differences so much. I think it would be more economic. The cultural differences there would be is that there'd be a flowering, I believe, of Scottish culture, because that's what's happened in other countries where political independence has been gained.
Other than independence, what would you say you're in politics to try and achieve?
I think we're all in politics, and I'm talking about people of all political parties, because we want to make a difference and we want to make life better. I know folks say you're all in it for yourselves. I mean, if I was in it for myself, I wouldn't have joined the SNP, especially at a time when we'd no elected representatives in Glasgow and Gaithiu in the west of Scotland. So I think most people who are in politics are in it, you know, because they do want to make a positive difference to their community and their country. They may disagree about how that's achieved, but we all certainly want to make life better. There's probably a few rotten apples in the barrel, but I think you get that in all walks of life.
So your next track, can you introduce that one, Kenneth?
Yes, this is another one that some people might find obscure. It's Ryuichi Sakamoto, who's Japanese, and it's Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, and this is a theme tune for a film I saw way back in 1984, a very haunting tune, and it's about forbidden love. Thank you.
So I'm afraid, Kenneth, our time's running out.
Indeed.
But this is the bit I wanted to be getting to, is about your own personal faith, because you did say to me at one point you were a church member, and where is it you're a church member again?
I'm a member of the Old Kirk at Kilburnie. I was originally in Glasgow a member of the Cathedral Church, but since I've moved to Kilburnie in March 2007, I've joined the church there. I don't go every week, I'm not trying to pretend I do, but I do go as often as I can, and certainly I go probably about a dozen times a year or so, actually. I have to say, I often find myself working on Sundays, and that's why I perhaps don't go as much as I would like to. But I do actually find it very peaceful going to church, and I do find it quite a moving experience. I have to say that the minister that we have at the moment, the Reverend Alan Saunderson, I think his sermons are actually wonderful, and I do always feel much better having been than before I go in.
Do you think being a Christian affects you being in politics? It's a kind of hard question to answer, I appreciate
it. No, I think it does. I think Christianity is such a core part of our culture and our identity in Scotland that it does actually, I think it's an important moral compass for politicians and from people from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And I do think, therefore, it is something that we fall back on a lot of the time. I think some people who are very much involved in religion, such as yourself, probably think that many people in the lay community don't really focus as much on the religious aspect of their personalities or their spiritual part as they perhaps should. But I think it really is a core part of most of us, to be honest. And I think in times of trouble, when we have bereavements or there are real difficulties in our lives, the church is a rock that many of us depend on. And so although a lot of clergy may think of themselves as just being there for hatches, matches and dispatches as far as the public's concerned, I don't think that's really true. I do think that a lot of the public actually have much more faith than perhaps there is believed to be the case.
And are there difficulties in having a Christian faith in the world of politics? Is that a difficult environment? Does it cause moral dilemmas and ethical dilemmas for you?
I don't know that it does, actually, to be honest. I mean, I think, there is a strong Christian background in the Scottish Parliament, and, for example, there are regular prayer breakfasts, and there are many people who are quite strong in their religious beliefs. And I have to say, across the spectrum, I mean, in my own political party, we have many members of the Church of Scotland. We have Episcopalians, Catholics, and of course we have a Mormon, in fact, and we have a number of atheists and agnostics as well. So it's quite a broad kind of belief system. But I would imagine that most people we don't really talk about it, funnily enough, that much. If you lined up 10 MSPs, I couldn't tell you what religion most of them were. But I do think it is an important bedrock in their personal, family, and indeed political life.
Mm-hmm. And there's a group that is always praying for the Parliament, isn't there? They sit with their red jackets.
Yes, in actual fact, I've been adopted by a kirk out in Cambus Lang, in actual fact, who adopted me about 11 years ago, and they often contact me and tell me that they're praying for me and all this kind of stuff. I think that's quite reassuring. You know, I think it's a good thing, and it's good to know that there are people out there thinking about you. And, of course, what's important is that you don't let these people down.
Well, thanks again, Kenneth, for coming and sharing all your thoughts with us. We appreciate you taking the time. We're going to have your last track. It's Prince, the most beautiful girl in the world. Is there a particular reason for that?
I just think about my wife, actually, when I hear this tune.
That's very romantic of you. Very nice. So, thanks again, and thanks to you, dear listener, for tuning in to 3TFM's Holy Half Hour, and bye for now.
Thank you, Alex.